You won't. You'll just be with Lena, and Ian will be, I don't know, being Ian.
Being Ian. It was like its own extreme Olympic sport. Music, football, school, all at a higher intensity than everyone else. Do you have any idea why Ian wants to come to Italy with me? Because I don't think he even likes Lena. She lived with us for 6 months and he barely even talked to her. Is he just trying to torture me?
He shrugged. Little Lena? I'm sure he likes her. She's funny and kind of quirky. Plus, she has all that crazy hair.
How long has she been gone again?
I wanted to say the actual number of days, but I knew that would sound neurotic.
Since the beginning of June.
And she's staying in Italy permanently?
My shoulders rounded in on themselves. Permanent sounded like a life sentence. She's staying for the school year.
Her dad, Howard, is a serious traveler, so they go all over the place. In October, he's taking her and her boyfriend to Paris.
Lena's boyfriend. Yet another thing that had changed. Over the past year, Lena had gone through a lot of changes, starting when her mom, Hadley, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. A familiar ache ignited in my throat, the one that always flamed up when I thought about Hadley. She had been special, no doubt about it. Creative, adventurous, chaotic, and just the right amount of hovering to make you feel cared about, but not smothered. Sometimes I felt like I'd experienced Hadley's loss twice. Once for myself, and once for Lena. I'd been desperate to drag Lena out of the grief she was floundering in, to the point that I'd made myself sick with worry. I bit my cheek, fighting back old feelings of helplessness to refocus on Archie and the trip. It makes way more sense that Ian would choose to visit all the castles and other sites you guys are seeing this week. Aren't you going to the castle where Braveheart was filmed?
Archie perked up, just like I knew he would. Every single one of them could recite that movie by heart. We are definitely going to the Braveheart castle. Walt brought face paint so we can do some reenactments.
Oh, jeez. Aunt Mel was going to love that. See, Ian loves that movie. He used to fall asleep watching it. I think he's coming to Italy just to bug me.
Maybe he wanted a little quality time with his sister.
Right, because he's been spending so much time with me this summer.
Archie rolled his eyes, but there was no arguing with my sarcasm.
Ian had spent most of the summer locked in his room, writing college application essays, and driving around on mystery errands, his music blaring. And then I'd gotten involved with Cubby and brought our relationship to a standstill. Not to mention what had happened at football camp. Suddenly, Archie shifted, his eyes boring into mine.
So, Addie, talk.
There was a serious edge to his voice, and my heart rate climbed to a rickety pace.
About what? What's the deal?
With Ian? I asked uncertainly. Please tell me he didn't hear. Archie shook his head no. My heart clawed its way up to my throat, pushing my voice out in an angry burst.
Well, then I don't know what you're talking about. Easy, sis. I'm not the brother you're mad at.
He steadied me with his gaze.
I heard what Ian said before you pushed him.
My breath caught in my throat, and I scrambled trying to remember exactly what Ian had said. How much could Archie have pieced together from one whispered conversation? What did you hear?
Are you in some kind of trouble? What does Ian want you to tell Mom and Dad about?
Archie doesn't know what happened. I flopped back in relief. I'm not in trouble, I said quickly. So far, that was the truth. As long as this thing didn't spread any further than it already had, I was not in trouble.
Embarrassed and heartbroken? Yes. In trouble? No.
which was why I was not telling my mom. Archie studied me, his head resting on his hand.
So what? Does this have something to do with a guy? I'm guessing someone on Ian's team from how pissed off he sounded.
Was that incredulity? My body tensed. Why? You think it's impossible that a popular football player would like someone like me? I snapped.
What? No.
He held his hands up defensively, his blue eyes wide.
Addie, I didn't say that at all.
Why are you acting so strange? Because my heart hurts. Because it actually is impossible for someone like Cubby to like someone like me. I kept my eyeballs glued to the velvet green upholstery, scratching my thumbnail against a tear in the seat. Tears burned hot in my eyes. Did Mom and Walt hear? He shook his head.
Mom was secretly negotiating a deal on her phone, and Walt had headphones hidden under his hair. He didn't even know you guys had gone over the side until everyone started freaking out.
At least it was Archie who had heard, and not Walter. Of all my brothers, Archie was the most normal secret keeper, as in he kept most secrets most of the time. It was the other two who were extreme. On the one end was Ian. The second you told him anything, he turned into a human vault. It was the reason I didn't have to worry about him being the one to tell my parents about Cubby. And then there was Walt. The exact opposite. Any time he had a secret to keep, it was like a game of hot potato. He just had to throw it somewhere, usually dead center of wherever you didn't want it to go.
If this guy messed with you, I'd be happy to pay him a visit on my way back to campus. Maybe just wait until he's out in the road and do some distracted driving? Back out without looking behind me first? All I need is his name.
His tone had gone from his usual laid-back Archie to hyper-intense Archie, which was rare. No! Archie, I do not want you to run anyone over, I said emphatically, just in case his half-joke was half-serious.
You sure?
Yes, I'm sure, I wailed. It's not like it would fix anything.
It would fix the fact that he's messing with people he shouldn't be messing with.
I put my hands on his shoulders. Archibald Henry Bennett, promise me you won't do anything.
You sure?
Promise me, I yelled.
Fine, I promise.
Oh my hell. Brothers. It was like having a bunch of guard dogs that occasionally turned on you. I was completely exhausted by this conversation. By this whole day. Well, thanks for the talk. But I could use some time alone, I said, tilting my head ungracefully toward the door. I'd learned long ago that hints get you nowhere with boys. Or at least not with the ones I was related to. The more direct, the better. Archie jumped gracefully to his feet and patted me clumsily on the shoulder.
I'm here for you, Addie, he said.
And I really appreciate it. I tilted my head more aggressively toward the doorway.
Okay, okay, I'm gone.
He jumped up and swaggered out of the room. His to-do list lit up in neon over his head. Be there for little sister. Check. Once Archie was out of my visual, I grabbed the guidebook and flicked on the library's dusty side lamp. I tried to focus on the words, but Ian kept snagging my gaze. He hadn't moved from his chair once, and he was still laser-focused on his phone, his hair flopping forward to shield his face. Right after Christmas, Ian decided to stop cutting his hair, and no matter how much my mom begged and threatened, he hadn't let up. Now it was almost to his shoulders, and a constant reminder of how unfair the gene pool was. My brothers all had my mom's thick eyelashes and wavy dark hair. My grandmother's fine blonde hair had leapfrogged a generation, bypassing my dark-haired dad to land on me. We all had the blue eyes, though, and even from here Ian's were looking bluer than usual, accented by the heavy dark circle around his left eye, courtesy of me. The bruise looked really painful and final, a punctuation mark on the end of a long, miserable sentence. Suddenly, a smile split Ian's face, and a mixture of emotions bunched up in my chest. Because here's the thing about Ian's smile. It was always 100% genuine. Ian didn't fake anything for anyone. He never had. Get him laughing, you knew you were actually funny. Make him angry, you knew you were actually being an idiot.
I am such an idiot.
Panic bubbled in my chest, and I jumped to my feet, tucking the guidebook under my arm. I needed fresh air. Now. As soon as my mom got swept into conversation with the groom's mother, I took off, hugging the side of the dance floor to burst through the doors and into the courtyard. Outside, I paused to take a few glorious breaths. If I were writing a travel brochure for Ireland, I'd start with what it smells like. It's a combination of just fallen rain mixed with earth and something else. Something secret. Like the extra sprinkle of nutmeg in the top-secret French toast recipe my dad and I had spent 4th of July weekend perfecting. What if my dad finds out? Before my mind could dig its fingernails into the thought, I started moving, walking down the stairs past a trickling fountain overflowing with rainwater. Strings of warm, twinkly lights crisscrossed over the courtyard's path, the yellow bulbs making a cheery clinking noise in the spots where they overlapped. Puddles shimmered in the divots in the stone pavement, and the air ruffled in cool, sparkly perfection. How was it possible to feel so horrible in a place that was so beautiful? I squeezed my fingernails into my palms, a dull ache blossoming in my chest. Sometimes I didn't know if I missed Cubby, or if I missed the picture I'd put together in my head of the two of us. It was always the same. It would be mid-September, a week or two after everyone's start-of-school jitters wore off. We'd be walking down the hall, him with his arm slung casually around me, lost in one of those conversations where the only thing that matters is the person you're with. Whispers would follow us down the hall. That's Addie Bennett. Aren't they cute together?
I know. I don't know why I never noticed her before either.
Well, I'd gotten my wish. They'd be whispering all right, but not about what I wanted them to be. Finally, I made it to an ivy-enclosed alcove on the far side of the garden, an outdoor version of my hiding place in the library, and I attempted to sit cross-legged, cold seeping up through my mom's constrictive skirt. I pulled out my phone, and my heart bounced when I saw a new text message.
Where are you?
Lena. Lena and 18 question marks. I counted them twice to be sure. Aggressive punctuation was never a good sign with Lena. Normally she texted like a 19th century schoolteacher who'd gotten a hold of a smartphone. Proper use of capital letters, restrained emoji use, and always a complete sentence. Multiple question marks was the equivalent of Lena standing up in the middle of a church service and yelling cuss words through a bullhorn. She wasn't just angry. She was raging. I hit respond, quickly typing out an exceptionally vague text. Sorry, can't talk now. Wedding stuff. Frowny face. I was getting good at vague texting and avoiding phone calls. The frowny face emoji looked up at me judgmentally.
What? I snapped. For your information, I have a great reason for not answering her calls.
I wasn't talking to Lena because I couldn't talk to Lena. She knew me too well. The second she heard my voice, she'd know something was wrong, and I refused to tell her about Cubby over the phone. If Lena was going to judge me, I wanted to see it in person. There was also the issue of the sheer number of things I had to tell her. She didn't know anything about Cubby, which meant I had to walk her through my entire summer. I just had to make it to Italy, Once I got there, I'd unpack the story and lay it all out, start to finish, nothing excluded. I knew exactly how it would go. First, she'd be shocked. Then, confused. And then she'd be struck with a brilliant plan for getting me through my junior year while reassuring me that everything was going to be okay. Or at least that's what I kept telling myself. The first time Cubby ever spoke to me was 4 days after we moved to Seattle. I was making waffles. Bribe waffles, to be more specific, and I wasn't having an easy time of it. Archie and Walter had been assigned to unpack the kitchen, and they'd somehow managed to turn it into one large booby trap. I'd taken a baking sheet to the head and dropped an entire carton of eggs when I tripped over a bread maker. But once my first waffle was on the iron, sending delicious spirals of steam into the air, I knew it would be worth it. I took a deep, satisfied inhale. The waffles needed to be delicious. They were my ticket into the early morning hangout Ian had expressly banned me from. No one yells, "Addie, get out of here," to someone holding a plate of hot waffles. Not even when they're trying to impress their new friends.
"You have batter in your hair."
And there they were, the first words Cubby Jones ever said to me. Admittedly not the most romantic introduction, but I was only 12. I didn't have a name for the way my attention funneled to Cubby every time he walked into a room. Not yet. While I swiped at my bangs with a dish towel, Cubby stepped closer, sniffing the waffle air. The second he was within 5 feet of me, I pinpointed what was different about him. "Your eyes," I crowed, abandoning my dish towel. Cubby's eyes were two different colors. His smile slipped off his face.
"It's called heterochromia. It's just a genetic thing. It's not weird."
"I didn't say it's weird," I said. "Let me look." I grabbed his arm and yanked him in close. "Blue and gray?" I whispered.
"Purple,"
Cubby corrected. I nodded my head. "Yep, I like that one the best. If you were in a sci-fi movie, that eye would be the source of all your powers." Both of his eyes widened, and then he smiled a slow, surprised drizzle that started at his mouth and went right up to his mismatched eyes. That was the moment I realized there were two different ways to look at boys. There was the regular way, the way I'd done my whole life. And then there was this way, a way that made kitchens tilt ever so slightly and waffles go forgotten in Mickey Mouse irons. The sparkler send-off for the newlywed couple was a joke. Not only did my legally tipsy oldest brother attempt and succeed at catching one of the rose bushes on fire, but cameraman number two kept missing his shot of the bride and groom. This meant repeating the whole process over and over again until we ran out of sparklers and even the most camera-hungry wedding guests began to bray mutinously.
"Buses arrive tomorrow morning at 6:30 sharp,"
Aunt Mel yelled over her shoulder, as Uncle Number Three carried her back into the hotel. The train of her dress dragged behind her, sweeping up bits of confetti and dried sparklers. The send-off had been just for show. They were staying at Ross Manor tonight with everyone else.
"Finally free to go," my mother said quietly, running a tired hand through her hair.
Her mascara was smudged, and it made her eyes look blurry. The rest of us followed behind her, slogging silently up the billiard green staircase to our floor, then filed one by one into our closet of a room. Despite the fact that there were 5 of us, including 2 college football players who were roughly toddler-sized versions of King Kong, Aunt Mel had assigned to us what had to be the smallest room in the hotel. Fuzzy floral wallpaper decorated the walls, and my brother's cots occupied most of the space. So all that was left over was a tiny corridor running along the base of the beds. And of course my brothers had filled that up with their never-ending supply of junk. Candy wrappers, tangled up phone cables, and more sneakers than should really exist in the world. I had a term for it. brother spaghetti. I managed to claim the bathroom first and lock the door behind me, turning the tub on at full blast. I had no intention of actually taking a bath. I just needed to drown out the sound of everyone crashing around the room. Traveling with my family made my head hurt. I yanked off the real estate dress, replacing it with an oversized t-shirt and a pair of black pajama shorts, then brushed my teeth as slowly as possible.
"Gotta pee, sis,"
Walt shouted, banging on the door.
"Gotta pee, gotta pee, gotta pee, pee, pee."
I yanked the door open to make it stop.
"Cute song. You should trademark that."
He shoved past me.
"Thought you'd like it."
I picked my way through the room, avoiding half a dozen sneaker landmines before climbing onto the bed and cocooning deep into my blankets. I couldn't wait to sleep. Forget. It had been my main coping skill over the past 10 days, ever since Ian had burst into my room to tell me how badly I'd screwed up his life. His life. Like he was the one who would have to spend the whole upcoming year avoiding Cubby and everyone who knew Cubby. My stomach twisted as tightly as the sheets.
"So, what's the strategy exactly? Wear my t-shirt until I forget it's mine?"
Ian's voice pierced through my blankets and I slowly uncovered my head. Was he talking to me? My mom was stuffing her suitcase like it was a Thanksgiving turkey, and Archie lay with his face planted on his cot, still wearing his suit. Ian propped himself up on a mountain of pillows, one earbud in, his face pointed in my general direction.
"You gave it to me,"
I said, aiming my voice for what a sitcom writer would mark as retort, sassy. It was an exceptionally comfortable t-shirt with a black collar and sleeves and "Smells Like the Only Nirvana Song You Know" written across the chest in block letters.
"If I gave it to you, do you mean you raided my t-shirt drawer and stole the softest one?"
Nailed it. "You can have it back," I said. "Ian is talking to me. Talking to me." A flicker of hope sprang into my chest.
"Do you even get the reference?"
he asked, punching his top pillow into shape. His hair was in a horrible attempt at a man bun, with bumpy sides and a large chunk hanging out the back. He clearly hadn't watched the How to Man Bun Like a Boss tutorial I'd forwarded him. "Ian, I sat with you on Fleet Street and listened to the entire Nevermind album. How would I not know what it means?" That had been during Ian's Nirvana period. We'd gone on 3 different Nirvana-themed field trips, including a trip to Kurt Cobain's red vinyl childhood home. I'd even agreed to dress up as Courtney Love for Halloween, even though it required wearing a tiara and no one knew who I was.
"At least you know what it means."
Ian flopped grudgingly onto his side. He hesitated, then nudged at his phone, his voice slightly above a whisper. "When are you going to tell Mom?" I groaned into my sheets. He was bringing it up again. Now? When Mom, Archie, and Walt were all within earshot? Not to mention that's what the black eye had been about. One of Ian's teammates had texted him, asking about Cubby. And instead of waiting until after the wedding ceremony when we could be alone, he shoved the phone in my face and whisper demanded that I tell Mom. Our parents finding out was the worst thing that could happen. Why didn't he get that? "Ian!" I hissed. He cut his eyes at Mom, then shot me a warning look. I growled in my throat and then slid down under the covers, forcing my breathing to calm. The odds of me not exploding on Ian were only as good as the odds of him not bringing up Cubby every chance he got. That is to say, not good. Time to put a hard stop to this conversation. "Good night, Ian." I slid even farther under the covers, but I could still feel Ian's glare on my back, sharp as needles. A few minutes later, I heard him rustle under the covers, the music from his earbuds filling the air between us. How were we going to survive a full week together?
The next morning, I awoke to what sounded like the brass section from our school's famously exceptional marching band, rumbling with our famously unexceptional drama team. I opened my eyes a slit. My mom was untangling her leg from the alarm clock and lamp cords.
"Damn hell spit," she muttered.
Or at least that's what it sounded like she muttered. Walter was right. Mom needed a swearing intervention. I opened my eyes half a millimeter more. Weak sunlight puddled under the curtains, and Archie and Walter and their extreme bedhead stood next to the door looking all kinds of ambiguous about the state of their consciousness.
"You both have your passports, right?"
my mom asked them, finally freeing herself. They stared at her with blank, sleep-coated expressions, and she sighed before swooping in on me in a cloud of moisturizer. "Your cab will be here at 9. The gnomes will knock on the door to wake you up." She pressed her cheek onto my forehead, like she used to do when I was little and had a fever. "Promise me you'll work things out with Ian. You two are the best friends you'll ever have." Way to twist the dagger. "Love you, Mom," I said, scrunching my eyes shut. She crouched down next to Ian and mumbled something to him, and then the three of them cleared out of the room, banging loudly into the hallway. It felt like only minutes later when a slamming noise sprang me out of sleep. I sat up quickly, disoriented, but not too disoriented to notice that the entire vibe of the hotel room had changed. Not only did it feel twice as big without Archie, Walter, and my mom, but the curtains were straining against full, brilliant sunlight. The room was silent, highlighting a distinct ruffling sensation hovering in the air. Had someone just been here?
"Ian," I whispered, "are you awake?"
He didn't budge, which was typical. Ian could sleep through almost anything. I rolled onto my back and lay still, straining my ears. The hotel's silence was as thick as black pudding. Suddenly the door to our room pulled quietly shut, followed by an explosion of footsteps down the hall.
Someone had been in our room.
A thief? A European kidnapper? One of the gnomes?
"Ian," I said, tumbling out of my bed. "Someone was just here. Someone was in our room."
I reached out to shake his shoulder, but in a highly disorienting moment, my hand sank straight through him. I yanked off the covers to find a pile of pillows.
Had he pillow-ghosted me?
I spun around, checking the rest of the cots. Empty, empty, and empty.
"Ian!"
I yelled into the silence. My eyes darted to the door, and what I saw elicited my first real bit of uneasiness. Instead of the two navy blue suitcases that were supposed to be standing by the door, there was only one. Mine. I hustled over to the alarm clock, but it stared up at me blankly. Of course. My mom had ripped it out of the wall. I needed to find my phone. Not under the sheets, not under the complimentary stationery, not in the scattered brochures. Finally, I ran to the windows and flung open the curtains, only to get kicked in the retinas. The countryside was on fire. Green and sunlight combining to create an intense glare. Apparently, Ireland did have sunshine, and it was blinding. I stumbled my way to the door and burst out of the room, my bare feet making staccato echoes down the hall. Downstairs, I did a flyby inspection of the breakfast room and lounge, but the only form of life was an obese orange cat who'd taken up residence on a velvet armchair. I sprinted out the front door and into the parking lot. And a wave of cold air hit me head-on. Irish sunshine must be for looks only. The only vehicle in the parking lot was a lonely utility van, parked next to a line of rose bushes, waving frantic messages at me in the wind.
"Where's Ian? Did you miss your cab?"
I needed to pull it together. Even if I had overslept, it's not like Ian would have left for Italy without me. Maybe he was just out for an early morning walk. With his suitcase?
The distant sound of an engine starting pulled me out of my trance. I took off after it, the shuddering noise getting louder as I headed toward the side parking lot. When I rounded the corner, I skidded to a stop, giving myself a few seconds to process what I was seeing. The tortured-sounding vehicle was technically a car, but it just barely qualified. It was tiny and boxy, like when a Volkswagen and a hamster love each other very much, with a splotchy paint job and a muffler dangling an inch or two off the ground. And striding purposefully toward it, navy blue economy suitcase in hand, backpack slung over one shoulder, was Ian. Adrenaline hit me full force. My legs got the message before I did, and suddenly I was charging across the parking lot, my brother in my line of target. He saw me just before he reached the passenger door. But by then, it was too late. I collided with him like I was the Hulk going in for a high five. Which was to say, hard. His backpack went flying and we both hit the ground, tumbling for the second time in 24 hours. It hurt in a white-hot, head-pounding kind of way.
"What are you doing?" he hissed, scrambling to his feet.
"What am I doing? What are you doing?" I yelled back, jumping up to shake off the fall. He lunged for his backpack, but I beat him to it, wrapping the handle around my fingers.
"Are you trying to leave without me?"
I demanded.
"Just go back up to the room. I left a note on the bathroom mirror."
He wasn't meeting my eye.
"A note? Is this the cab Mom ordered for us? Why is it in such bad shape?"
Suddenly, the passenger window began cranking down in jerky, uneven motions. The sound of an appreciative slow clap filled the air, followed by an Irish voice.
"Ah, Ian, you've been beaten by a girl. I wish I'd been recording. Would love to see a replay." "Rowan!"
Ian hustled over to the window, his voice much happier than someone who'd just been tackled in a parking lot should sound. He wore the same massive grin he'd had plastered all over him last night during his text sessions. I dropped Ian's backpack on the ground and ran over, butting him out of the way so I could get a look inside.
"Well, hello there," the driver said.
He was Ian's age, maybe a little older, with tousled hair, large grayish eyes, and horn-rimmed glasses that should have been perched on an old man's face, but managed to be at home on his. His t-shirt said "Hypnotizing Cat" and featured a large feline with whirlpool eyes. Definitely not a cab driver. He smiled, and a dimple appeared charmingly on one side. Until now, I thought that dimples only came in pairs.
"Who are you?" I demanded.
He stuck his hand out.
"I'm Rowan, and you must be Addie."
His accent was 100% Irish, sing-songy with the vowels getting soft and running together like chocolate syrup and ice cream. I ignored it, his hand and the chocolate syrup voice. But I couldn't ignore the way he was looking at me, like I was something rare and exciting that he'd just discovered in the wild.
"How do you know who I am?"
I asked.
"I knew Ian had a sister named Addie, and let's be honest, only a guard or a sibling would tackle someone in the middle of a stony car park."
When I didn't match his smile, he dropped his, self-consciously reaching up to push the corners of his glasses up with both hands.
"Or at least I'm guessing that's how siblings operate. Also, you look like the mini female version of him."
"Do not call me a female version of Ian," I snapped.
My first week of high school, at least 5 of Ian's friends had made it a point to tell me that I looked like my brother with a blonde wig, which was not the confidence booster I'd been looking for. He held up his hand quickly.
"Chillax. I didn't mean to annoy you. I probably wouldn't like it if someone called me a male version of a woman either."
The dimple reappeared.
"Also, I come in peace. So please don't attack me, too."
Ian quickly nudged me aside.
"Sorry about this, Rowan. Minor glitch in the system. Addie,
go back up to the room. Your taxi will be here later, and the note will explain everything.
Had he just called me a minor glitch in the system? What do you mean, my taxi? It's our taxi. Why are you out here talking to...
I stopped. I'd been about to say hypnotized cat guy, but that just sounded rude.
Ian grabbed my arm, pulling me away from the car and lowering his voice so hypnotized cat guy wouldn't hear.
Great news. Your wish is granted. I'm not coming with you to Italy. Go upstairs and read the note. It has all the details.
The parking lot revolved once, then twice. He was serious.
You're not coming to Italy? Since when?
I asked dizzily.
He swiped his hair out of his eyes and put a steadying hand on my shoulder.
Since always. I'll meet you in Dublin for the flight home.
My mom had only arranged for our flights to and from Italy. The plan was that we would return to Dublin to fly home with the rest of the group. But now it seemed that plan was about to be compromised.
But why?
I asked desperately. Rowan's voice pierced the air between us.
I thought Addie was in on this. Why doesn't she know we're going to Strad Valley?
I was momentarily distracted. The way he said my name made it sound like it was being played on an Irish fiddle.
I left her a note, Ian said, his cheeks flushing pink. He shoved his hair out of his face and slid his eyes guiltily at me.
It's easier this way.
For who?
I shot back. Rowan leaned toward the passenger window, his eyes concerned behind his glasses.
A note? No wonder she just knocked you over. This must look unbelievably sketchy. You meet some random guy and leave for a place she's never heard of?
I lifted my hands in the air.
Finally, someone's making sense here.
Rowan looked pointedly at me.
Strad Bally is a small town near Dublin, but we're headed to a few other sites first. We have to do research for...
Stop, stop, stop!
Ian stuttered.
Please, don't tell her anything.
He shoved past me again and yanked on the car door handle, but it didn't budge.
Don't tell me what, Ian! Don't tell me what!
I grabbed at his backpack. Rowan smiled apologetically at my brother.
Sorry, Ian. According to the previous owner, the door hasn't worked since the late 90s. The lads always just have to climb in through the window.
Who are the lads? I asked, as if that were the most important question that needed answering.
Ian hoisted his backpack in and slithered through the window before reaching for his suitcase. I lunged for it, but he managed to pull it in.
Addie, just go read my note. I'll see you in a few days.
I clamped my hands onto his window frame. They were shaking.
Ian, were you not in the car yesterday? Didn't you hear what Mom said about us not messing up? This is the definition of messing up.
His shoulders slumped.
Come on, Addie, you said it yourself. You don't want me to come to Italy, and I get it. I even respect it. So you go have your trip, and I'll have mine. The only way we're going to get in trouble with Mom and Dad is if we tell them. And let's be honest, neither of us is going to do that.
Ian, just stopping by Electric Picnic,
Rowan added in the kind of soothing voice you'd use on a rabid dog.
We'll be done by Monday morning. Nothing to stress about, Ninja Sister.
Electric what?
The hypnotized cat looked at me pityingly. My voice sounded hysterical, strangled.
Electric Picnic. It's the biggest music festival in Ireland. It happens every year, lots of indie and alternative stuff. But this year is special. Guess who is headlining?
Rowan paused, his smile suggesting that I just dangled something warm and cinnamony in front of his nose.
Not Ian,
I answered weakly.
Yes, Ian, Ian said. Definitely Ian. And you won't even care because you'll be off in Italy having an incredible time.
Title track will be at Electric Picnic, Rowan said.
his tone a clear indicator that we'd both just let him down. Title track. It took me a second, but my mind leapfrogged to a massive poster hanging over Ian's desk. Four guys, four brooding expressions, and an admittedly unique sound that I'd actually started to look forward to on the mornings when Ian drove me to school. That band you love, from the UK.
Now you've got it, Rowan added encouragingly.
Only they're Irish, not British, and Ian's planning to...
Okay, Rowan, that's enough.
Addie, have a great time in Italy. Ian cranked at his window, but I threw myself on top of it, using all my weight to keep it down. Ian, stop! Rowan looked disapprovingly at my brother. You were just going to roll the window up on her. Ian shrank under Rowan's stare, and he dropped his gaze to his fidgeting hands, like he was trying to decide something. Addie, I'll explain it all later. Just make sure Mom and Dad don't find out, and everything will be fine. You'll figure out a way. He took a deep breath, delivering the next part in a rush.
You've been lying to everyone all summer anyway, so this will be easy.
The line was rehearsed. He'd been carrying it around in his back pocket in case of emergency. In case I got in his way.
Ian?
Tears prickled my eyes, which of course made me furious. I couldn't lose it now. Not in front of this oddly dressed stranger, and definitely not when Ian was already settled into the oddly dressed stranger's car.
Ian, there's no way we'll pull this off. You know they're going to find out that you didn't make it to Italy, and then we'll have to quit our teams.
His gaze collapsed to the dashboard. Come on, Addie. Sports aren't everything.
Sports aren't everything?
Now my breath was catching in little bursts in my chest. What was he going to say next? Fainting goats aren't hilarious?
Who are you?
This is my only chance to see Title Track in concert. I'm sorry you don't like it, but I'm going.
The edges of his voice set hard and crinkly, his eyes a steely blue. The look set off a chain reaction of panic in me. We had officially entered the Defiant Ian stage, better known as the Never Back Down Ever stage. Unless I did something drastic to stop him, he was going to that concert. Now or never. I dove through the window and grabbed the keys out of the ignition, then shimmied out before either of them could process what was happening.
Addie!
Ian yanked his seatbelt off and scrambled out the window. I was already on the other side of the car, the keys imprinting in my palm.
Are you seriously doing this?
Wow, you people are really entertaining, like sitcom-level entertaining. Rowan reclined his seat noisily. I squared toward my brother.
Ian, you can't do this. You know I have to play soccer if I'm going to get into a good school. Don't ruin this for me.
Your college plans are not my problem.
His voice fell halfway through. He was trying to play the tough guy, but the real Ian was under there. The one who knew how hard I tried and continued to fail at school. Sometimes I got the impression that he felt guilty about how easily things came to him, when nothing ever seemed to come easily to me. We stared each other down, waiting for the other to make the first move. Ian stepped toward me and I bolted in the opposite direction, using the car as a buffer.
Ian groaned. Sorry, Ro, let me just get this out of the way and we can head out. Minor bump in the road.
Don't you mean glitch in the system?
I asked, purposely making my voice snide.
And Ro? You already have a nickname for this guy?
Ian shoved his hair back, edging toward me.
I've known him for more than a year.
How?
We met online.
Ian lunged at me, but his foot slipped on the gravel, giving me plenty of time to make it around to the other side of the car. He rose slowly, holding his hands up in surrender.
All right. All right. You win.
Ian, give me some credit. I've fought with you for 16 years. You think I don't know that the fake-out is your go-to move?
He just raised his hands higher.
Look,
Even if Mom and Dad do find out, that just means we're even. I have to deal with the fallout of you messing around with Cubby, and you have to deal with the fallout of me staying in Ireland. Now give me the keys.
I told you to stop talking about Cubby, I said. And you being embarrassed in front of your friends is not a fallout.
Rowan's voice floated out the window.
Is Cubby your oldest brother?
No, Ian said shortly, his eyes on me. That's Walt.
Oh, right. Walt.
Rowan cracked his door and got out, clutching a jumbo-sized box of cold cereal that read, Sugar Puffs. Look, guys, as entertaining as this is, we all know you can't keep this up forever. So why don't we head inside and grab a real breakfast? He shook his Sugar Puffs winningly at Ian. Or something stronger if you need it. A pint? We could talk it through. I shook my head. We aren't old enough for a pint, and there's nothing to talk about. In a flash of dark hair, Ian slid across the front of the car and clutched my wrist. We settled into a death grip, Ian fighting to wrench the keys from my hands while I curled up like a pill bug, channeling all my energy into keeping my fists closed. Another classic Addy-Ian fight move. In junior high, we'd once maintained this position for 11 and a half minutes, and that was over an Oreo. Walter had timed us.
Ian, let go!
Rowan leaned back against the car, popping a handful of cereal into his mouth. You two are the best argument I've ever seen for single-child families. He crunched for a moment, then swallowed. Okay, here's a wild idea. Addy, what if you relinquish the keys to my custody, and then join us on our first stop?
Not a good idea, Ian said, leveraging his shoulder against mine.
What do you mean, join you? My elbow plunged directly under Ian's ribcage.
Addy, Ian groaned. That hurt.
That one's my signature move, I said proudly. Hear me out. Rowan raised his Sugar Puffs into the air. The first site is not too far from here, less than an hour. Addy, you can come with us and learn a little more about what Ian's doing. Then the two of you can come up with a solid plan to avoid detection by your parents, and then Addy can be on her way. No death matches involved.
First sight. Did that mean there was more than one? Curiosity bit into me, but I wasn't about to start asking questions. Not about a trip Ian was not taking, and especially not when every bit of my energy was currently being channeled into maintaining possession of Rowan's keys.
We can't risk missing our flight, I said, putting a heavy emphasis on the we. Not seeing Lena is not an option.
Who's Lena?
My best friend.
Oh, da, the one who moved to Italy.
What else did Ian tell you about me? I asked, doubling down on the keys.
Don't flatter yourself, Ian said. Believe it or not, we don't spend all our time talking about you.
I spun away and tried to run for the hotel, but Ian executed a half tackle, and the keys flew out of my hands, jangling across the gravel. I scrambled for them, but Ian got there first. He ran for the car.
Let's go,
he shouted, tossing the keys to Rowan. But Rowan didn't follow. Instead, he carefully placed the keys in his pocket, surveying me seriously.
Just come with us on our first stop. The airport's a straight shot from the Burren. We'll make it in plenty of time.
Burren. Where had I heard that word before?
You know where, Buttercup, a little voice said.
Guidebook lady.
Of course.
Are you talking about the place of stone? I asked.
He brightened, shoving his glasses up enthusiastically.
You've heard of it.
I read about it last night. Ireland for the Heartbroken had a whole section on the Burren, right after the Cliffs of Moher entry. What were the odds that Ian's first stop on his not-happening road trip was also in my heartbreak guide? My stance shifted.
You really think we'd make it on time?
Absolutely. Rowan flashed me a friendly smile. Ian made a strangled noise, then positioned himself between us.
Look, Rowan, I appreciate what you're trying to do here, but this is a bad idea.
And just in case Rowan didn't get the point, he kept going.
A really bad idea. We need to stick to the original plan.
It is not a really bad idea, I protested.
But we would be following the original plan, just with a minor detour to the airport. It wouldn't put us behind at all.
Rowan's voice was slow with uncertainty, his eyebrows bent. He didn't have to say it for us to hear it. Why are you being such a jerk about this? Ian's shoulders sagged and his right hand disappeared nervously into his hair.
But there's a lot of stuff in your car. Where would she sit?
Easy. She's a little yoke. We'll make room. A little yoke? Rowan lifted his chin up to me. You don't mind a tight squeeze for an hour or so, do you? I leaned over to look through the back window. Ian wasn't exaggerating. Not only did the car have the tiniest back seat in existence, but it was packed full, the way Archie's and Walter's cars were whenever they left to start a new semester at college. A jumble of clothes, books, and toiletries. For once, being tiny was going to pay off.
I can make it work.
Ian shifted back and forth between his feet, absent-mindedly strumming the zipper on his jacket. He was torn. No matter what he said, he didn't feel okay about abandoning me at the hotel. The big brother was too strong in him. I was going to have to use it to my advantage.
Look, it makes sense.
Rowan held out the cereal box to Ian, but he waved it off. What you guys need is some time to get used to this idea. Going to the Burren will give us that time.
This is a bad idea, Ian repeated.
You already said that.
Two scenarios played through my head. Best case, I use the extra time to talk some sense into Ian. Worst case, I saw another guidebook site, and maybe got one step closer to healing my broken heart. That is, if guidebook lady knew what she was talking about. Before continuing on to Italy alone. My mental magic eight ball tumbled out an answer. All signs point to yes. I took an authoritative step toward Rowan. I need you to give me the keys.
Do not give them to her, Ian ordered.
One of Rowan's eyebrows lifted, a smile pulling at the corner of his mouth. I have to go get my suitcase, and I need insurance that you aren't going to just leave while I'm gone.
Rowan, Ian warned.
Rowan nodded thoughtfully and threw them to me in one smooth motion, his grin still playing on his face. His smiles felt like a payday.
Sorry, Ian, she's right. I wouldn't leave us alone in the parking lot either, and I'm a sucker for a well-thought-out argument.
Victory. Ian shook his hair into his face and crossed his arms tightly.
Addison Jane Bennett, if you are not back down here in 5 minutes, I will come looking for you.
Rowan's dimple dented his cheek.
Better hurry, Addison Jane.
Addison Jane Bennett, B-minus in geometry? I thought you were straight A's all the way.
I stumbled back into the doorway, hand to my chest. It was early one morning in July, and I was either hallucinating, or Cubby Jones was standing in my kitchen, looking at my report card. I blinked hard, but when I looked again, he was still there. Only now he'd deployed his signature grin, one hand still on the fridge. A lot had changed since the morning I'd made him waffles. Cubby's smile didn't go all the way up to his eyes anymore, and something about him looked calculated, like he'd figured out its power and was using it to his advantage. Like now.
What are you doing here?
I managed to choke out. He grinned again, then pulled himself up onto the counter in an easy athletic motion.
Don't try to change the subject, B minus? What does your honor student brother think of that?
I bombed the final, I said,
attempting and failing it nonchalant. And you know report cards are confidential, right? Meant only for the person they're addressed to? I attempted to snatch the paper from his grip, but he held on to it tighter, pulling me toward him before he let go. And suddenly I was 12 years old again, in this very kitchen, looking into his eyes for the first time and noticing that Cubby was different. The memory must have hit him too, because this time the old Cubby was back, his smile climbing to his eyes.
So, he cleared his throat, looking me up and down. Are you going out for a run?
I quickly crossed my arms over my chest, remembering what I was wearing. A ratty t-shirt, and an ancient pair of volleyball shorts that were so short I only wore them to bed, or for quick trips to the kitchen for early morning Pop-Tarts. Or in this case, quick trips to the kitchen that resulted in running into my longtime crush. Sometimes I hated my life. No run, I'm just, I bit my lip nervously, desperate to get out of there, but also desperate to stay. What are you doing here, Cubby?
No one calls me Cubby anymore, Addison, he said, tilting his head slightly.
Well, no one calls me Addison. And the question stands. I edged toward the hallway, the tile cold under my bare feet. Cubby's stare ignited too many feelings in my stomach, and they tangled into a knot. Why did I have to look so gross? Upstairs, the bathroom door slammed shut.
I'm picking up your brother. Coach called for an extra practice this morning, and Ian said you had the car today.
We have joint custody, I said. This weekend it's mine. Cubby nodded knowingly.
But you made sure to explain to the car that it isn't his fault, right? And that you both love him very much?
A laugh burst out of me just as Ian appeared in the doorway. His hair was wet from the shower, and the strings from the two sweatshirts he wore tangled together. He was the only person I knew who ever wore two hoodies at once. How he managed to put them on was an unsolved mystery that I had been attempting to put to rest for several years now. Cubby lifted his chin.
Hey, Bennett.
Ian nodded at him sleepily, then squinted his eyes at me.
Addie, why are you up so early?
I was on the phone with Lena. The time difference meant I sometimes had to get up really early if I wanted to talk to her. He looked at my pajamas and wrinkled his face. I didn't have to be a mind reader to know what he was thinking.
Bye, Addison.
Cubby smiled disarmingly, then jumped off the counter giving me a long look as he followed Ian out. Bye, Cubby, I called back, my heart hummingbird fast. The second he was out of sight, I fell against the counter. Why did I always have to act like a love-struck third grader? I might as well walk around with a t-shirt that reads, I love Cubby Jones. Suddenly, Cubby's face appeared around the corner.
Hey, Addie, you want to hang out sometime?
I shot back up to standing. Yes? You'd think that living with so many brothers would mean I'd know how to talk to guys, but I didn't. It just meant I knew how to defend myself, and the way Cubby was looking at me, really looking at me, I had no defense for. It set my capillaries on fire. Back in the hotel room, I set a world record by getting dressed, packing my suitcase, and locating my phone all in less than 6 minutes. Once my sneakers were laced, I stuck my head into the bathroom to check for Ian's alleged note. Sure enough, there was a folded-up square of paper wedged into the corner of the mirror, my name spelled out in Ian's minuscule handwriting. Ian, come on, I groaned. Chances were I wouldn't even have seen it there. I jammed the note in my pocket, then wheeled my suitcase to the doorway, pausing when I caught sight of the guidebook peeking out from under my cot. I hurried over and scooped it up. I didn't like the idea of stealing from the gnome's library, but something about the guidebook's crinkled pages made me feel better, less alone. And besides, what if guidebook lady was telling the truth? What if she was an expert on heartbreak? I needed all the help I could get. Maybe I'd figure out how to mail the guidebook back to the gnomes from Italy.
Outside, the car was right where I'd left it, and Rowan stood rummaging through the trunk. Now that I wasn't actively engaged in fighting off my